Good morning, everyone. This is the Housing and Transportation
Committee. Morning.
And it's 9:31. It's September 9th, 2021. Just remind everybody, myself included, to silence our phones. And then we're going to start with taking a roll call. And Jenna's going to do that for us today because
Linda. All right. So Linda Barcelona is absent. Elizabeth Busick is absent. Helen Cameron. Amelia Castro. Gary Chang. Jerry, you might be muted. Gary Chang.
You hear him?
Yep, you're there. Okay, got you. Jean Hernandez. Juno Kim. Juno Kim. He's there. He might be muted. I'll list him as present. Jennifer Wang. Jeanette will be joining. She'll be joining a few minutes late this morning. Sandy Stang.
Here.
Amina St. Matthews.
I'm here. Good morning, everyone.
Dave Tetzloff.
Here.
Cynthia Thacker.
Here. And could you please ask Jerry to mute himself? We're getting so much static from his phone, whatever.
We could also go ahead and do that. We'll take care of that. And Denise Barnes.
Here.
All right, did I miss anything? Anyone? I think a few people may join. Helen, I see you joined, so I'll mark you present.
Thank you.
And we also have a caller ending in 6311.
Yes, that's Jean Hernandez.
Okay, hi Jean. I'm gonna rename you so then your name, your phone number is not.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with my Wi-Fi on my laptop, so.
No problem, so I'll mark you present. Thank you, we do have a quorum.
Great, thank you. And then introductions. Jenna, do you wanna introduce Desiree to everyone?
Sure. Of course. So Desiree Gonzalez, everyone, you can see that she's joined us. She joined OC Community Services a couple weeks ago. She'll be assisting SCAC, amongst many other things for our department. And she is not new to the county. She's been with the county for many, many years. So she has a lot of experience. She came from Child Support Services, but is really eager to learn OC Community Services programs and really eager to start assisting with the Senior Citizen Advisory Council. So you will see emails from her moving forward. You are welcome to reach out to her. She will be shadowing me for the next few weeks, and then she will then start taking lead in assisting SCAC. So welcome, Desiree.
Oh, great. Thank you, Desiree. And then we have a change in the agenda because Jeanette's going to be a little bit late. So if it's okay for the presenters, we'll go ahead with the presentation next. That's Karen, Lauren, and Jennifer. And Helen, do you want to introduce?
Yes, I would. I'm sorry, I'm also having technical difficulties this morning on my computer. I'm really happy that we're able to hear the presentation. I'm not sure if Jennifer's on the call, but I have, in the last 2 to 3 years since the whole concept of transforming mental health and behavioral health services began, I've been really privileged to see the leadership that both Karen Linkins and Lauren Brand have brought to the conversation. So without further ado, I'm very proud to introduce them. And they're going to be sharing some information. They will need to share their screen. Thanks.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Okay, let me share my screen. All right, can everyone see that PowerPoint slide?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great, thank you.
We're seeing the speakers view, Lauren.
which is fine.
You can change your own view to gallery. So yeah, if anyone can't see us, if you go to the top right corner, you can change the view to gallery. I think Karen, you can change it on your own screen.
No, that's not what I was talking about. I was talking about the PowerPoint. It's showing the second slide. The presentation mode.
Oh, thank you. Yep.
And thank you all for having us here today. We're really excited to be able to give this presentation.
Okay, how's that? Is that the right one?
Perfect.
All right. Hi everyone. We're super excited to tell you a little bit about Be Well and about the Be Well campus. So Karen will start and talk a little bit about what Be Well is and the Be Well movement. And Karen, just let me know when you want me to advance slides.
Okay, you can go to the next slide. Thanks, Lauren. Helen actually, I think, gave us a good intro here, giving the reference point of over the last several years, there has been an intentional effort in Orange County to actually create what we're calling the Be Well movement. It started in 2017-ish when a variety of stakeholders came together and said, you know, we have issues around mental health in our community, we have issues around addiction, and we really feel like we can do something about it. We feel like we need to create a better system of care and actually create a system, recognizing that there are lots of resources in Orange County that are really wonderful, lots of programs, lots of organizations that address different aspects of these issues. But there is a challenge around the coordination of that. And so what the Be Well movement does is it's bringing together a public-private sector approach that includes many different sectors, ranging from hospital systems to academic and faith-based institutions, and many, many CBOs, community-based organizations around Orange County, as well as residents, to really reimagine and to work together to build a better system of care in Orange County. Next slide. And this gives you a sense of, kind of how the system is right now. It may be kind of harsh to say it's no system, but what we see is, again, like I said, there are lots of resources in the community. They just aren't very well coordinated. And there are some efforts to link and coordinate across some of the sectors and some of the programs, but it doesn't roll up into a unified system. And what that leads to, and Lauren, if you could hit we have some things here, what it leads to are bad outcomes. So we have increased crises, we have law enforcement and EMS that become the default respondents. And then also hospitals and jails are serving as a important, you know, linkage within the system. And that's not the best place to provide that kind of care. Next slide. And this slide gives you a sense of some of the statistics. Every year, an estimated 50,000 avoidable visits to emergency departments happen at an average cost of admission of $2,000. And if you do the math, that takes us up to $100 million in annual spend on care that is like not necessarily the most appropriate, and it's in the wrong place and it's at the wrong time. And we also have a shortage of psych beds. And that is not getting any better, just like I think all of you are probably very aware of the workforce challenges that we have. And so, you know, in the Be Well movement, we are working together to try to solve this. And I have to also acknowledge that this is all in coordination with the healthcare agency as well, and also the social services agency and Cal Optima. Next slide. So this gives you a sense of the fragmentation and what we're moving toward. If you could do the next one, Lauren. What we want is a coordinated system of care and that can address the needs of all residents of Orange County, not just those who are on Medi-Cal, not just those that have severe and persistent mental illness. It's really making sure that we are able to support the needs of all residents of Orange County. Next slide. And so in the Be Well movement, we are working on four specific areas, and we're working on programs and efforts around navigation, building a mobile response that's augmenting what the county already has through the CAT teams. This is actually more in coordination with some of the cities. And we also have a regional campus approach, and Lauren's going to be talking about our Orange campus that opened this year. And then we are also steering toward improving networks of care. And so we have, for example, an ACEs implementation grant from the state where we are working. We have over 40 organizations that are working together to begin to pilot a trauma-informed network of care. And we're hoping that that can grow into something that is, you know, more substantive. And on the mobile response side, I will just do a quick advertisement. This month, we have our coalition meeting and it's on the 23rd, and we will be featuring a lot of information on the mobile response if you're interested, and we can send that information after the presentation. Next slide, please. As part of the Be Well movement, we have created with the community a blueprint, what we call a blueprint. And in the blueprint, we've specified 6 results that we see as being critical to achieving the ultimate goal of Be Well. And so, you know, the first is reducing stigma. The second is preventing and acting early, closing the treatment gaps and improving access, strengthening the crisis response system, establishing community wellness hubs, and aligning partners' policies and programs. And all of this is recognizing that these are systems changes that need to happen. They need to be done in collaboration with many partners. And you can see just a couple of the partners that are working actively in the Be Well movement. There are many more. We actually have over 700, I think we're probably closer to 1,000 organizations and individuals associated with Be Well at this point. And you know, if you're interested, we would love to have you all be more involved. And I'm gonna turn it over to Lauren now to talk more about the campus.
All right, thank you, Karen. So one of the pieces that Karen talked about was the regional wellness campuses in Orange County. So you heard from the presentation that part of the issue is that there is a lack of care and a lack of coordination around that care in specific areas that of treatment. One of those areas is in treating people that are in crisis. So both mental health crisis and those that are in a crisis where they're dealing primarily with addiction. So to address that need, the Be Well movement has a plan to open 3 campuses, wellness campuses, where treatment will be available to fill in some of the gaps and create more opportunities for people to get into care that need it. So the first campus, which is the Orange campus, which I'm sitting in right now, this was opened earlier this year. The first service opened in January. And we're in planning right now for the second campus, which is located in Irvine, adjacent to the Great Park area. And that will be starting construction next year with a plan to open in 2023. And then the third regional campus will be somewhere in the central coastal area. We don't yet have a location for that, but that will be coming soon. And how we can achieve this is Be Well has brought together a unique mix of public and private partners to help to fund these campuses and to bring the campuses to life and ensure that they are providing the right care for people. So here, the slide just shows you some of the partners that are involved in this first Orange campus. Okay, so here's an image of the Be Well campus that's in Orange. One of the things that we've really focused on for this campus is creating a different experience for those that are coming in and receiving care. So if any of you have been to the campus, when you walk in, the campus is really, it's really beautiful. There's a lot of construction and design elements that were put into place specifically and intentionally to create an environment that is conducive to healing. It's an open environment that has a lot of light, has access to green space on all of the program areas and units. And part of the Be Well experience is we follow these guiding principles for each campus that we open. So one of the things is a commitment to serve all community members regardless of their payer status. So having this public-private partnership allows us to to admit people into care at these campuses if they have Medi-Cal, if they have commercial insurance, if they have no insurance. So the campus is for everyone who is an Orange County resident. The environment is, a lot of attention was paid to destigmatizing mental health. And when you create an environment that is warm, welcoming, respectful, people are proud to get care there. And we want people to not feel a sense of shame or fear around getting care at the campuses. There is a sense of collaboration with the public-private partners and all of the community agencies that participate in the campus services. The campuses are a place that provides hope and trust. We support an integrative continuum of care and a seamless connection to services. So in addition to the treatment that happens at the campus, we have on-site people who help with housing navigation. We have peers through the healthcare agency who help people to the clients here and their families to get connected to whatever services they need in the county. And we have on-site peer support, we have housing support, we have support through NAMI and resources for families whose family members are in care here as well. And then of course, all the research is showing that this outdoor connectivity within a building creates a much healthier treatment environment. So we think of the campus as a therapeutic tool. And so there's a lot of indoor-outdoor spaces, as you can see in this picture. And another outdoor space, this is a terrace and one of the residential programs. So the Be Well campus has various levels of care. What we created at this campus and what we will continue to create at all of the wellness campuses is a continuum of care for people who come in, from coming in crisis through residential care to enhance when someone leaves, to enhance their ability to remain stable and sober over a period of time. And so the way you do that is you provide crisis care, and then you provide levels of care that people can go into after they're out of that crisis phase, to go into residential care where they can stay a while in care and then get all of the resources that they need to support their recovery once they leave the campus. So you can see that the campus is three stories. It's a 60,000 square foot building. And think of the campus as having two lines of service. So there's service for mental health and also for substance use treatment. And we know that there's a lot of crossover between those. The first floor of the campus is mainly focused on urgent care or that crisis care level. So this is to provide the right care in a targeted care for people who are in a mental health crisis or who are acutely intoxicated instead of going to the emergency room. So this way they can come in, they can get care very, very quickly. They're typically in the unit and with treatment within the first 30 to 45 minutes. So that's the recovery or sobering station, and the crisis stabilization units, which is crisis stabilization for mental health crisis for both adults and for adolescents. And then the second and third floor of the building are our residential programs. And so we have for the substance use treatment line of service, we have a withdrawal management or a detox program, a residential program for people who need a little bit longer on that sobering area. And they can go and they can stay anywhere from a week to 10 days is a typical length of stay. Sometimes they can stay for 2 weeks. And then they can move into on the substance use treatment residential program, which is your typical 30 to 90 day residential treatment for primary substance use issues. And then there's also a co-occurring residential unit, which is for people who have both a primary substance use issue and a primary mental health issue. So both are addressed within that program. And those are also 30 to 90 day programs. Sometimes people can actually stay a little bit longer. And then for the mental health line of care, The crisis stabilization units are on the first floor. That's a short stay up to 24 hours. And then there's a crisis residential program, which is a mental health residential program. Most of the people who stay there are there for somewhere between 2 weeks to 30 days. And they can move from one program to another. So if someone comes in a crisis, they go into one of the residential programs, they could potentially go into another residential program. We have the opportunity to keep people in care for, 4 or 5 months. And that's very unusual. But the longer you keep someone in care, the better they seem to do when they leave the campus. And so this is a different slide showing really the same information that I showed before. And what this shows is that the way that we provide care at the campus is there are two contracted providers that have expertise in the two lines of service that we have at the campus. So Exodus Recovery operates the mental health programs and Telecare operates the substance use treatment programs. So having one provider for each of those lines of service allows us to transition people from program to program or level of care to level of care very easily because it's usually within a network that they are transitioning from program to program at the campus. So this will give you just a visual impression of what a crisis stabilization unit looks like. So you can see that it is recliners, not beds. It doesn't look or feel like a hospital. The recliners do go all the way down so that it becomes a pretty comfy bed. But the unit is very unlike an emergency room, which is typically where people in mental health crisis go. And then this is what the sobering or recovery station looks like. So this is also a short-term stay, up to 24 hours. People are typically coming in when they are acutely intoxicated. They're staying for about 6 to 8 hours, but they can stay for up to 24 hours. And during that time, the staff are working with them to connect them to other services to continue their sobriety and try to get them long-term sobriety. And here's an image of what our residential programs look like. So you can see it's very homey. It doesn't look or feel institutional. And so for any referrals to the BeWell campus, the main BeWell campus phone number, that number can always be called to get to any of the programs. And then we do take direct referrals for the urgent care or crisis care services. So for crisis stabilization and for the sobering station, they can be called directly. For the residential programs, the BeWell campus main number can be called, or OC Links, which is the healthcare agency behavioral health referral line. They can also be called to help to get anyone into any of the levels of care and service at the BeWell campus. And so we do take referrals 24/7. It is not a walk-in facility. So we ask that if anyone is making a referral to please call ahead, because what we definitely don't want is for someone to show up and have to turn them away because there isn't a bed available. And then here's contact information. Here's my email address and Karen's, and then our website in case you want more information. Okay, so I'm gonna unshare so that we can open up for questions. Does anyone have questions about any part of the BeWell movement or the campuses? Hi, Helen.
Of course, I have a question. I think my screen's frozen. Can you comment a little bit about the communication between law enforcement and our homeless programs throughout the county? Because I know many people are very interested in accessing the wonderful resources that you have there at the Orange location.
Yeah, so the majority of people who were brought in to the urgent care or crisis care level at the BeWell campus, most are brought in by law enforcement. So to facilitate that process, we've invested hours and hours of time in building relationships with law enforcement and in bringing them to the campus and training them on our referral processes. So we've engaged with 19 law enforcement agencies, including all of OC Sheriff. We've trained about 1,000 law enforcement officers, and so that they know to bring people to the Be Well campus who are in a mental health crisis rather than taking them to the emergency room. Or if someone is intoxicated, and often they're picked up on the street, they're cited for public intoxication, and instead of doing that, the law enforcement officers are saying to them, we won't cite you if you will go to the Be Well campus sobering station. And so we're trying to get a system of care that is more about getting people into treatment, targeted treatment, rather than a punishment or using up emergency room resources. So the good majority are brought in by law enforcement. For your question was about homeless providers as well. So we've also built relationships with a lot of the homeless providers in the county. We have a relationship with, we actually have a staff person from Jamboree Housing who is stationed at the Be Well campus to help with connecting people to stable housing at all levels. And so we have built the relationships with law enforcement so that if there's anyone who is homeless, whether they're at a shelter or out on the street, that law enforcement can be used to bring them to the Be Well campus. And a lot of time when people who've been here before, they're willing to go with law enforcement voluntarily. And that way we don't have to place them on a hold. Although if they are placed on a hold, we can still take them here.
And I would just add the service that we are doing with Jamboree, that's a pilot, and it's very exciting. It's starting to show some very promising results. We're gonna be seeing some data pretty soon. So that's very good, because the whole point is making sure that we are managing effectively the transitions of care, both into the facility and then also back to the community, and making sure that people are stable. And so in addition to working on the housing piece, the Navigator is also working on getting folks document ready, making sure that their insurance status is stable, things like that as well. All the things that you all are very familiar with.
Yeah.
Denise, the question?
Actually, let's go to Denise first because she has her hand up, and then Sandy will go to you next.
Oh, no, I was calling on Denise.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Good teamwork.
You do it. You call on the people. Good for you, Denise.
Denise.
Thank you so much. I am so excited about Be Well OC. I mean, this is like the last cog in the whole homeless crisis when we started way back in 2012, 2015, and started shelters, but we didn't have the mental health part. And I just want to congratulate you and all the staff and all the other parts that have come together and networked so well. But I have to ask, with each city, we have our own shelters, we have our own other pieces. How well do you continue to work with them? So that way they don't feel like they're just working at all by themselves and not having that the resources that you offer.
I love it. You're speaking our language, Denise. Karen will jump in on this as well, but it's such a critically important piece of what the Be Well movement is. The foundation of the Be Well movement is about collaboration and partnership. We always say, who owns Be Well? You do, we do. It's owned by the whole community. Be Well is actually not an organization, it's a movement. And the movement includes everyone who works every day to try to help the people that are out there that you all see and we see at the campus. So those relationships have to be collaborative, and we both take referrals from the shelters and we send referrals to the shelters. Our relationships with cities is critically important as well, because the services that each city provides is one piece of what we're thinking of as this continuum of care that needs to be coordinated. So the relationships are built and being built, and we can always do better and create better relationships in those areas. because we're working with the same populations.
Are you familiar with CCRT in Anaheim?
Yes.
And how are they using you for the end game with them, starting at the curb with a person who's mentally unstable?
Yeah, so this is a part of that referral relationship network. And so there's a referral relationship that between the Be Well campus and the work that they do. So they are welcome to refer, and we'll refer to them when needed. But they can, in collaboration with law enforcement, because that's usually who is bringing people to the campus. So often there's a relationship between someone that they're seeing on the street and then law enforcement actually bringing them to our campus. Yeah.
And then as you see things escalate, whether it's meth or other drugs or bath salts, all these weird things that are out there that have caused people to just be totally reckless with their lives, do you report out to the county health departments and let them know that we see a high rise in this or that, so that way we can become familiar with it and our police departments can come and be better educated on approaching those type of mental they're not a mental patient, they're just abusing drugs or some other product.
So Karen can address some of the reporting, mm-hmm. but there is reporting that goes back to the county and to the other investors in the Be Well campuses. And the Be Well campus just opened this January, right. And each of the services came online one at a time. So we became fully operational where all the programs were open at the campus in May. So how we're reporting and how we're gathering data and how we're reporting this to the county and to the community is an evolving process. So some of what you mentioned, we're already collecting, and some of what you mentioned still needs to be collected and reported.
Yeah, I mean, we're in the process of building dashboards that can report this information and, the diagnosis and, other information like that can be included. Right now, we are not reporting that to the county. The individual programs, Exodus and Telecare, are doing their routine reporting to the county. And I don't know on the county side who's looking at those data, but obviously they do. But what you're raising, Denise, I think is super important because we would like to think of, a core principle of the Be Well movement is around equity, and it's also around being data driven. And so we have a very, very firm commitment to being part of the conversation around the changing trends and things that we're seeing, especially as we are touching individuals. And so, it's kind of an area that needs to be developed a little bit more. And then, to the question related to our connections with the cities, I alluded to the mobile treatment work that we're starting to do. We currently have two contracts. We have one contract with Huntington Beach and another contract with Garden Grove. And we are piloting the CAHOOTS model, which is out of Eugene, Oregon. And it's basically in collaboration with law enforcement and the cities. So it does include the shelters and that kind of thing, but it's really to offer a less intensive, if somebody is in crisis or something like that, they are greeted by somebody with mental health training and not somebody who's currently carrying a weapon. If that's needed, then that level of, that can be connected and escalated. But, our belief is that so many of these crisis calls that come in and are dispatched at the city level can actually be addressed in a different kind of way. And so we've been live in Huntington Beach for the last couple of weeks, and it actually is really remarkable in terms of what we're seeing so far in the coordination with the EMTs, the fire, and law enforcement. And that's another place where we are very actively collecting data, because we actually have more control over that data, Denise, because you know, the providers of the campus are, you know, they're collecting the data. We are not the providers of the campus. We're kind of the umbrella for them. But in the mobile programs, we actually are providing the service, and we are developing dashboards there. And so I think that this becomes a conversation that we could have with this group. It would be, what kind of information would you all find useful and helpful? And we can see, you know, how we could be reporting it to you, because the whole point is to have transparency.
Yeah, you know, Denise, I'm still thinking about one part of your question around the what substances people are using now out on the street, and how are we addressing those specific substances and the care that we provide, and, you know, in the communication and our relationship with law enforcement. So I think that it's still an evolving process as we get more time under our belt of running these campuses, and the law enforcement agencies learn more about the relationship that we have and how we can support each other. So I've been very, very impressed with how law enforcement is responding to us. So we're providing something that they need, which is a place to take people when they're in crisis.
Sure.
And we're providing a sobering station, which helps law enforcement as well. What they love is that when someone is brought to our campus, either in a law enforcement vehicle or in an ambulance, the turnaround time from those first responders entering the campus, handing off the client, providing what information, and then leaving the campus is about 10 minutes. So compare that to what happens in an emergency room. And so they are motivated to bring people here. And then what that does is it provides open communication that we have with law enforcement around what they're seeing and what we're seeing. So we also bring together, I just had a meeting a week ago with 17 of our law enforcement agency leadership, just to talk about how everything is going. And we're learning a lot from them about what they're seeing. And then they are calling on us to do trainings for the officers and for OC Sheriff. So I think that what you're saying is going to evolve more. And then we have to respond and evolve our program plans to respond to the individuals that are actually out there and seeking care. So, you know, there's a lot of, for like all these substances that you named off, how do we treat those, and what type of service, how do we need to modify what we do at the campuses? And I'm sure that what we're doing today will be a little bit different from what we're doing in a year from now as we learn and adapt. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Just one last question. So you said two cities are signed up with you. Is that how it works? The city has to sign up to get your services?
Yeah, they've basically contracted us, and we're actually collaborating around building the service. And so
that's only for the mobile, for the mobile crisis response teams.
Yeah.
For but the BeWell campus.
That's still here. Awesome. I mean, you figure a bigger cities like Santa Ana and Anaheim, it would be gold for them. I'll have to encourage our council. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely. And we actually, by the end of the year, anticipate bringing online six or seven cities. So, not the end of the year, it'll be into 2022, but this is part of this collaboration where we know that the cities are very interested in these services. And at the same time, it's really important, as you saw, like from the fragmentation slide, that we don't have, you know, 34 different strategies around this. So we're really trying to, kind of harmonize and build a model that can actually work across Orange County. It can be tailored to the specific needs of the city, because there are some unique needs regionally. But having, you know, kind of that core, how you go about doing it is really important. And then we think that that'll be, more cost effective for the cities as well, because this becomes the collaboration, you know, with the across the cities, with the sheriff, and then also with the county. Helen?
One more quick question, which is, I think, particularly pertinent to our group. Are you seeing the older community, the seniors that we are supporting, being able to utilize both the campuses and the mobile units?
In short, yes. we're seeing people of all ages. Seniors have access to all of the services that we outlined today. So the only thing that would prevent someone who's a senior from being admitted to one of the BeWell campus programs, so this is not for mobile response because they'll work with anyone, is right. if the senior has a medical or an ambulatory issue that requires a level of care that we don't provide. Or if their primary issue is dementia or Alzheimer's, we'll refer them to a specialty program that is designed to manage those types of diagnoses. But in general, if they have a mental health issue, they can receive the services here just like anyone of any age. Yeah, and by the way, in the chat, I just put our referral information because I know that slide went by pretty quickly on my PowerPoint. So if you look in the chat, the referral numbers that I had on the PowerPoint are in the chat for you to take.
An excellent program. How are you getting your funding? Where is the money coming from and who's handling all this?
So the funding for building the campus came from that collaborative of partners that I showed on that one slide. So that's where the public-private partnership came into play. So it's a funding collaboration between our public healthcare system, Orange County Healthcare Agency and Cal Optima, and then our private hospital system. So our investors are Hoag, Kaiser, the Providence system, so St. Joe, St. Jude, and Memorial Care. And then we have partnerships with CHOC and UCI and others who have a role in the Orange campus, but when we have our Irvine campus, which will be much larger, they will have a larger role there as well, in addition to other organizations. And then for the actual care, the two providers, Telecare and Exodus, have contracts with the county to provide the services at the BeWell campus. And then we are working with commercial insurance plans to get them also connected with commercial insurance so that we can provide care to anyone with any insurance.
Okay, great, thank you.
Just to sum up, this is the most amazing transformation of a system, I think, that any of us have seen. And I'm going to take you back to some of the early conversations we had. One of the most astounding statistics that I heard was at Hoag Hospital, one out of three people that go to the ER are there for psychiatric services. They don't provide psychiatric services. So the need for these campuses is really significant because a whole different solution is being provided in the county. And we can't thank you enough for the leadership that you, Lauren and Karen, bring to this conversation. Your expertise is invaluable. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. If anyone on this call or any of your teams want to learn more about the BeWell campus, we have this Friday at 10 a.m., we have a virtual Zoom tour. So I'll go over some of the information that I went over today, and then we go into a little bit deeper conversation about referrals. So if anyone is interested in joining that, shoot me an email. Let me put my email address in the chat as well, and I'll send you the registration link.
And just as a reminder too, we do have the BeWell Coalition meeting on the 23rd, 1 to 3, and I will put my my information if anybody's interested in participating in that. That is where we will be featuring everything that's going on with the mobile piece. And this is also related to the collaboration with the county, because part of what we are trying to do is to bridge cities and counties with this work. And so anyway, if you want to know more about that, that'll be the time.
And if you miss it in the chat, we'll get it sent to you as members of the committee.
Helen, I'll send you, I'll shoot you an email that has the registration link for both the Be Well Campus virtual tour and okay. for the coalition meeting, and you can share that out with the group.
Yeah, we'll make sure that it's available if anybody is interested. There's a lot to learn. There's been an amazing process the last few couple of years, 3 years, I think I've been involved. So I'm really excited to see it all come to fruition.
Well, yeah, and thank you for all of the work that all of you are doing in your agencies. You know, it takes all of us to respond to the need that's out there. So we definitely appreciate you and the work you're doing.
Thank you.
Very much so. And thanks for the opportunity to share this with you today. I really appreciate it.
Very much. Excellent presentation. Any other questions? Okay, ladies, thank you once again. It was fabulous. I'm glad to see the progress. It's terrific.
Thank you. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you, Helen. That was a really good presentation. Helen helped me out at the last minute getting speakers. We were panicking, but that was very good. And I'm glad to see they're making such good progress. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And then I have to apologize too. Somehow, I don't know how I did this, but I skipped over the Pledge of Allegiance. So I apologize to everybody. I don't know how I did that. Has Jeanette come on yet?
Yes. Hello, everyone. I'm here.
Thank you, Jeanette. Do you want to do your presentation now?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And apologies once again for showing up a little late. Had a conflicting meeting just last minute. So, and thank you for everyone's patience. So I just wanted to report the July stats for the senior non-emergency medical transportation. Let me see if I can share my screen so I can, so everyone can see. And let me know once you're able to see it, okay? Is everyone able to see my screen? Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you all. So the total trips provided for Area 1 is 2,360. We have Area 2's trips for July as 2,464. Area 3 had 3,966 trips offered in, or not offered, but provided in July. Average cost per trip for Area 1 is $52.40. Area 2 has $43.73. And Area 3 has $45.53. Average trip length for Area 1 is 6.24 miles. Area 2 has 8.10 miles. And Area 3 has 5.40 miles, or 5.4, sorry. Average cost per mile for Area 1 is $8.39. Area 2 is $5.40. And Area 3 is $8.43. And I wanted to just share minor, referral story that I wanted to share with the group. A senior citizen actually reached out to me last week, and she lives in an apartment complex, and she, out of the kindness of her heart, gathered everyone around her to who wanted the booster shot. Somehow I think she got someone referred her to me from the healthcare agency to arrange transportation for these seniors. So once I found out, it's about 20 seniors that wanted the booster shots and wanted transportation. But I know that we are, I know that we actually needed, before we even scheduled an appointment with our SNEMT provider, we needed the vaccination scheduled first. So what I did was I reached out to Abrazar, because the older adults actually reside in, I believe, in Garden Grove or Westminster, and that's within Abrazar's service area. I reached out to Mario. He's the CEO of Abrazar. He actually arranged vaccination appointments for all 20 seniors, and was able to get a translator because English was not also their first language. And he was also able to arrange for transportation. So if you know of anyone who's interested in, you know, getting booster shots or who's not aware that this program exists and they need transportation, please, you know, give them my name and number and we can arrange for that, because, you know, we want everyone to know what this program does, and it goes beyond vaccinations. You know, it could be used for doctor's appointments, for, you know, prescription pickups, dental appointments, even therapy, like physical therapy. So, you know, we wanted everyone to kind of, I love receiving calls like that from the public, because it's just, it's something that, you know, this person actually wanted to help out some of the fellow residents, and it's good that someone was able to connect her with the proper resources. And before I move on to my next topic that I wanted to share with the group, I wanted to ask, does anyone have any questions so far about the report, or may I proceed with the next topic that I wanted to briefly let everyone know about? Okay, perfect. So I wanted to let everyone know that Othena actually has a ride scheduling app feature that's available for older adults who would like to schedule a ride or a trip to the vaccination site. And again, it goes beyond that. You know, obviously that's your foot in the door. So again, a lot of members of the public probably don't know, apart from OC Access, that we have this program. And that being said, the Office on Aging, in partnership with the healthcare agency and the makers of the Othena app, the developers of the Othena app, actually came up with a way for older adults to request trips through the Othena app for vaccination purposes. And how it works is they request the trip. So say, for example, it's 2 weeks away, that their schedule, and they enter in their information, of course, their name, phone number, where the pickup and the drop-off location, and what their zip code is. And then a representative from either Ageville or Ambrizard, depending on where they live, will reach out to them. And if they're not already enrolled in the system, they will get all the enrollment application taken care of on their end. So it's just something that we wanted to advise the committee on, because it's in its very early stages. And Vin, who's in the meeting right now, Vin and I are actually monitoring the planning tab of the Othena production site, just to make sure that we're not missing any ride requests. So it's just something that we wanted to share with everyone. Again, this piloted feature of the Othena app has been release. It's in its early stages. So the more, you know, the more we can get people to avail of it or test it or even request trips from it, the more we can work out any type of issues or potential issues that we might come across. And like I said, it's monitored at least, it's checked at least 3 times a day by myself and Office on Aging staff. So that's just my little announcement. And again, I want to thank you all for your time and for your patience. I know I was a little bit late today. And if you had, does anyone have any questions? I'm going to stop sharing my screen so I can see the panel again.
Jeanette, for the people that would need the ride with Athena, how are they going to know that this is available?
I believe, I think they did have a press release. I'm not that sure exactly how I know it was released by Othena and HCA. And I think if there is a feature now, when you go on the app and you schedule and based on the age that you input, there is a way that you can, you know, there's a button there that would prompt you to, there's a button now in Othena. And once you hit request a ride, it'll prompt you to, but, you know, of course, obviously if you're already that far into the app, I'm sure you've already put your name down, your address, your, you know, your pertinent information. So they will just ask you to, they will just ask you to, you know, verify, okay, is this, where do you live or what zip code do you live in? So you can, they can assign it to the appropriate provider. Cause out of three service areas that we have, we only have two providers, but we want to make sure that we get them to the right one.
Right, right. Okay, yeah. Great. Thank you. I was just afraid no one would know about it, but I didn't know it was on the app. Okay, great.
Yes, it's on the app. And again, it's still very early. And you know, so far we've only received like test requests from the app developers. So the more people know about this, they're all welcome to use it. And again, we're thinking beyond the pandemic, right? So hopefully eventually if we get our older adults to, you know, to be comfortable in scheduling it through the app or whatnot, or even if right now that could be their gateway to this program. I mean, a lot of people don't know, everyone probably just thinks of OC Access, but you know, this is a program that's a little bit easier to get into, you know, and a lot of our, we have several active clients, but who are not currently using it all the time, but it's nice to just have a profile in that's already, that it's nice to be enrolled in case, say, your ride falls through at the last minute, or you know, you can't find anyone to provide you a you know, ride to the doctors. It's an option, and it's, you know, $2 one way. However, they can also always waive the fee. All you have to do is ask.
Okay, Helen has her hand up. She has a question.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Helen.
Yeah. Hi, Jeanette. I was wondering if Athena would be rolling out this information to all the older adults who will be looking for booster shots. They have a good record through the app already, and maybe once those booster shots start to be rolled out, they could just send out messages to all the people who qualify for older adult services to let them know that this is available?
Actually, I think that's a focus of Athena right now, is I know that they, you know, we have a lot of existing projects that kind of have to be on, to be honest, like kind of take a back seat a little bit, because I think Athena and HCA's focus right now too is booster shots, especially with the rate of vaccination for older adults in Orange County. We're doing really, really well, you know, from what I heard, you know. So I can definitely reach out to our contact in HCA and Athena to just let them know, is there any possibility that you could either put a text blast or an email blast to older adults who might need rides and who will qualify for the SNEMT program, and who are due for a booster shot, that so they're at least aware. And that's a really good point, Helen. So I'm reaching for my notebook because I need to note that. But yeah, I will definitely follow up with them on that one.
We could even contact the senior. You could contact the senior centers. That would be a perfect place to get that information out.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Good point, Helen. Anybody else? Questions for Jeanette? Okay, thank you very much for your report.
Thank you all. Great. Thanks.
All right. Okay, now we have number 7, announcements and roundtables. So I want to, first of all, thank Helen for getting us a speaker for this month. And she said she think she has a speaker for next month, so we'll still need to talk about a speaker for November.
And we definitely have a speaker for October. Natalie Bui from the Veterans Group is going to be talking about ending veteran homelessness.
Okay, Natalie
Bui, B-U-I.
And veterans, oh no, we changed the topic. We changed it to, you help me.
Progress. Progress towards ending veteran homelessness. Yeah.
Almost. Okay, great. Thank you. So when we go around the round table to discuss, except for Helen, let's talk about whatever you have to say, and then speakers for November if you have any ideas. And Linda's not here. Oh, and Elizabeth's next on the list. I don't want to tell personal information, but Elizabeth did tell me she had to go to the hospital. So if anybody wants to reach out to her, send a card or call her. I don't know how serious it was. She didn't mention that part. Is Amelia here today? I don't think so. Okay, how about Jerry Chang? Any comments?
I would like to talk to the journal to find out if we're gonna have somebody can speak on the November. We'll let you know.
Okay, that would be very good. And do you have any other comments that you'd like to make?
No.
Okay. And then we have, let's see. Kim, Juno, do you have any comments or anything else you'd like to say?
You're muted, Juno. You're muted.
How about now? Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you, yes.
Yeah. You know, the people are talking about a booster shot, but then the people are asking about the flu shots. I don't know if the seniors can take it at the same time, or they got to be an interval between the two shots. Does anybody know about this?
I just read the article. They can take the same time, so no problem at all.
Yeah.
You can take a flu shot and a booster the same time.
The same thing, Jerry. I heard the same thing.
We just had our meeting at Lake Forest for the Senior Advisory Board, and I wasn't aware of this. They said there's a flu shot more specific for seniors. So you might want to double check when you go to get your shot.
Yeah. Well, I will check around some more.
Okay.
Talk to doctors and all that.
All right.
Thank you.
Anything else? Jennifer's on the list, but you know, I don't think she's been here in a while. Does anybody know anything about Jennifer? Okay, I have to check on her. Jeanette, did you have anything else you wanted to add? Yeah, she's gone. Okay.
Oh, nothing. Sorry, nothing on my end. Thank you.
Okay. Dave said he had to leave early, so I don't know if he's still here. Are you still here, Dave?
Oh, he's gone.
Okay. Cynthia, did you have anything you'd like to say? And do you have any ideas for a speaker for either November or January?
I don't really have anything to say, but as a speaker, you know, I just want to maybe put this out instead of have a speaker that we readdress some of the topics, because we're going to guess next year, I think Jean will tell me, aren't we going to revisit some of our goals and stuff? And maybe we can revisit and see about working on updating them or something. You know, we had that transportation about, you know, plaques and stuff. I mean, I don't know. I'm just throwing something out there for different than a speaker that we can really do, maybe reevaluate what we're going to do and help solve a problem or something like that.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And I think we did that last year about that time in November, I think it right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's think about that.
Okay.
I skipped over you, Jean, somehow. I don't know how I did that. Jean, you're next.
That's easy to do. No, I have no comments to add. Cynthia's right. I want to say it's March that we'll revisit those goals, SCAC General will. As far as a speaker, you know, I need ideas of who you want, what topics. It's housing and transportation, so I can always get somebody from transportation. We've had a lot of housing, so but specifically, what do you want to know? What's the areas of interest? Let's try to stay focused, and especially with the goals we have. Is there anything there that we need to zero on to bring somebody on board?
That's why maybe we should not have a speaker that's a smaller issue, and then take 15, 20 minutes or 30 minutes and really talk about how we're going to go forward and think about. I'm a planning and agenda person. So next year's coming up and we should plan our focus. rather than just have a lot of speakers out there. So thank you, Dean. Jean, I agree with you.
Okay, so maybe what November we'll work on our goals and review our goals and then what our new goals should be.
And that's absolutely fine, Sandy. We don't need to have a presenter every meeting. So if we want to review and kind of thrash out our goals and clarify for each of us what we're looking at, we can certainly do that. You know, there's one comment that came out of the executive meeting, and that was that there still seems to be confusion among the different committees. You know, what is the agenda for SCAC? What is our role? And we're coming out with this real simple, and I think it's pretty clear, SCAC committee mission. And it says, and we should have this in an opening paragraph somewhere as we open our meeting. There are many topics of interest to seniors. Our role is an advisory body to the Orange County Board of Supervisors on matters affecting seniors. And as such, the topics discussed in our meetings are those topics that are within the purview of the board. Topics that do not fall within this area of responsibility are best left to be discussed at other organizations. So I know we go over this constantly. You know, what is our role? So if you kind of keep that in mind, that we're a resource for the Board of Supervisors. So the topics we want to discuss are something that they may need to know about. They don't do the deep dive like we do. So anything that pertains to one of these issues we want to make them aware of, that's what we should be looking at. So
and to add to that, that is why I mean, I've been president of a bit different. You set an agenda, and our agenda could be very focused on our tasks and ideas and tasks and going forward, so we don't move out of the area of what we're supposed to be doing. We keep focused. So
Denise has her hand up.
Hi, thank you. I've noticed, and this was just brought up to me, that we do have housing or projects like the Buena Esperanza that just opened recently, and there's no elevators for the second floor. I know too that Assemblywoman Sharon Quirk Silva was trying to pass something where there's more bathrooms or restrooms throughout the city. I mean, if you notice since COVID and the homeless has caused a lot of bathrooms, public places, restaurants. I mean, you can't go into like Food for Less or any place and be able to use a bathroom anymore because that was taken away. We need to bring that back for our seniors, especially in housing. I remember even Elizabeth talking about, and we have to insist on microwaves. I mean, we have to consider housing is still what's in it, not just what's around us. But as we grow older, and I know I have arthritis now, I really need stuff that even my prescriptions, I wanna make sure I'm not twisting bottles. I wanna have stuff that it's helpful. And
so what is the suggestion, Denise? Are you saying that how do we advise the Board of Supervisors on this? Or what are we suggesting to them?
I think we might have someone come that could give us an ADA perception, or an elderly, or someone, a doctor, or even a counselor that is going to be grooming us for being seniors and say, look, this is going to start happening and that. We have to educate ourselves to being that older person.
Yeah, but there's a committee that does that. That's it used to be the Health and Wellness Committee. They have a new name now. I can't remember what it is, a little more broader. But that's the committee that would be looking into that.
Do they bring those things forward to us, though, as far as housing?
No, they bring it to, no, not, just well, straight. They don't bring it to housing. I guess there could be a bleed over. Really, you're talking about more of a developer's issue. The housing developer needs to be doing what you're talking about.
Yes, because if the city is allowing that to be built without those amenities, what are we doing to help our next generation?
But there again, that's not something the county supervisors are going to give direction to cities. Mm-hmm. That's something we on the board here can go to our own city and say, mm-hmm. hey, you know, and I pay attention to that now too about microwaves. If a project comes through, I'm saying, hey, do you have microwaves? You're going to have a tougher time with the restrooms because every city's closing restrooms because of the abuse they take from the homeless. You know, they use that for their showers, for, you know, and they make a mess. And so it costs staff and maintenance crews to go out there and clean it up, and it gets expensive. And so you're right, there's a massive inconvenience for us.
Okay, we'll take this avenue then. We all know that dense housing is coming to every city, whether you like it or not. Is there some way that we can propose that there be an amenity for caregiver to live with, or some sort of housing stipend for the caregiver? I mean, we have to try to work within the budget of a senior, and for housing, it could entail having a caregiver. Is that something within our boundaries?
One of those committees, I sit on all the committees. I get a chance to kind of get a bird's eye view, and they're dealing with the whole caregiver situation, which, by the way, is massively complex because there is no standards. And the trouble, if you kind of create standards, it jacks up the cost to get a caregiver, and the lower income folks can't afford that. So they're going to continue to go with a relative or a neighbor referral who does it real cheap, kind of thing. So they're all doing those deep dives to try to come up with some type of alternative. And I guess it does kind of fall under the broad umbrella of housing. So we're really not limited. We can do whatever we want to look into, but if we do that, we're going to have to coordinate with the health and nutrition group. We're going to have to coordinate with those that are focusing on legislative, and we really don't have a ledge committee anymore. They're kind of all of ours. A ledge fix for that, which may fall outside of our purview, fall under John Pointer's area, where they're going to champion some changes in the law. But what you're really describing is more we have to make maybe visits to various councils and let them know that, hey, be aware when you approve housing in your city, these are some of the issues that seniors are having with, kind of a generic deal. And I'm not sure we can do that under the umbrella of a SCAC member, but we can do it as a senior advocate on our own and just go to a city and say, hey, you know, I've had exposure in these various areas, but I'm representing myself as a senior advocate. And here clearly the things that are coming up that you as a council need to look at and address when you approve building permits, particularly your planning department. Maybe a little workshop kind of thing, and educate them on what we're talking about, because that's really where that's going to happen.
You know, Denise, those are really good points. Maybe we should think about, when we start on our goals, is there some way that we could incorporate that, those issues you've been bringing up, so we get that information out? Like, for example, when Jean brought up the microwaves and Elizabeth brought it up.
Yeah.
It never even entered my mind. So somehow we should be communicating. You're exactly right. And that would be a part of housing, because that is in the housing issue. Mm-hmm. How do we get to the cities or whatever to communicate this?
And hopefully the county doesn't build any type of senior housing that doesn't have that in it.
Right. You know,
just under their boundaries of the county building.
Right.
But the county has very limited buildings other than the county facilities themselves, and they're usually pretty well ADA and all that. You're really dealing more with the issues of the 34 cities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's where this issue is falling.
Yeah.
And it's awareness, making people aware that, hey, believe me, the restroom's closing. That's an issue for everybody. I walk in the morning 3.5 miles and with a partner and I, and we're constantly, oh gosh, let's use, you know, they're closed. Because we walk around a park and it's like, gosh darn. So yeah, it can be an issue.
I think it's an issue for a lot of guys, even on a golf course. It's just a matter that you need to be cognizant that older people have incontinence problems or just need it. So, and I think it's sad if the more of us are going to be that population, that we continue to advocate for those things that will give us a real quality of life.
Yeah, I thought about that the more and more, that how we probably need these little porta potties on hiking. We have, Yorba Linda has 100 miles of trails, and that would be a great place periodically to have one of those. And then I'm thinking, okay, who's going to maintain? Our maintenance people have to come by and clean it and all that. But still, And we want seniors to get out and walk and exercise. So it's a good point. Wish I had an answer.
Yeah, I wish all of us had an answer. But I think that's viable, and think about that for our goals. Maybe that there's some way we could incorporate some of that into our goals.
Good point.
Well, I know at our golf courses, they're run by the city, and I've seen these elaborate bathrooms for like the red carpet. I mean, it's like a full-on bathroom, you know, even if the city invested in one or two of those at their golf courses, it definitely would be an improvement.
Yeah, our city owns our golf course, and we do, in fact, have what you just described, really nice restrooms along the way.
Yeah, it's not unheard of, sure.
That's all of a sudden becoming a priority, especially for seniors.
Exactly.
As you pointed out.
Yeah.
Okay. Did I miss anybody? Does anybody else have anything? So just real quickly then, we, Lake Forest had our first senior advisory board meeting. That was kind of interesting. They brought us up to date with all the changes, all the people they had to furlough, people they had to let go. And the senior center is up and running now, about 4 days a week. Started out, it was 2 days. And they're starting to bring a lot of the programs back, but everything's different now. We used to have a free lunch on Thursday. That's not free anymore. And residents will pay $2, and the non-residents will pay $4. And everything you have to register online now for everything. So they're really trying to encourage the seniors to figure out the computer system, because they think they're gonna get lost if they don't. I mean, they still have backup if you don't know how to use the computer, but that's what they're pushing for. And they're bringing most of the classes back, excuse me. So they're getting back. It's coming back slowly but surely. Glad to see it, because the seniors were so relieved to come back. They haven't complained about anything. Bingo used to be free, and now it's $2, but you buy your card and you get to keep it. Okay, anything else that we missed or we need to talk about? And I don't think we have any public. Okay, so our next meeting will be October 14th at 9:30 as usual. And don't forget to let us know if you're gonna be absent. And then if anybody can let us know anything about Jennifer, because she's missed quite a few meetings, so I don't know what's happening there. So anything else from anyone? Okay, so then we'll go ahead and adjourn, and it's 10:48. Thank you all for everything you do for the seniors. We really appreciate it. Good meeting.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.